evening, the city council passes the most unpopular city budget in years. A protester-occupied zone in Seattle is raided by police and a step back from bail reform. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with some of the news for Wednesday, July 1st, 2020. And the New York City Council passed an $88 billion budget last night. It includes $1 billion in apparent cuts to the NYPD, but the budget wasn't without its detractors. Protesters have been camped outside of City Hall for a week and made their displeasure known. Queens Council member Jimmy Van Bramer, a liberal member of the council, explained his vote.
They are angry, and they are right to be angry because so much is wrong. And we as elected officials should be listening with great respect and admiration because many of us began our careers as activists who were in the streets. And just because we're in government today and got elected to the city council doesn't mean we no longer have an obligation to listen and respect activists. That's how things get done. That's how things change. And that's why I'm voting no on this budget, because we didn't do enough. We didn't get to where we needed to get to. We failed in too many important ways.
And that's Jimmy Van Bramer. He's a council person from Astoria. The budget transfers some NYPD power to other city agencies. School safety officers will be moved to the Department of Education. School crossing guards and homeless outreach services will be transferred out of the NYPD. And next month's Police Academy class was canceled. The budget also relies on more than $500 million in police overtime cuts. During the online budget deliberations, hundreds of protesters from the encampment watched on a projection screen while others blockaded Center Street with makeshift barricades and bicycles. A member of the group took the bullhorn to explain why she was there to demand a $1 billion cut to the police budget.
I've been haunted our entire lives, so this right here does not scare me. I've been a victim of these predators, but the thing is that they don't know that I, too, am a predator for justice. And I am on the motherfucking prowl. I have this feeling in my soul that is a mixture of rage and grief and pain and fear and anguish and hope and love and power and faith and leadership and education and strength. But even with all of that encapsulated inside myself, I know that I am not enough to fight this war. We need everyone together on the same page. This isn't about who is with whose organization. This isn't about a battle of organizations. This isn't about who bought the best snacks. This isn't Canada Dry versus Schweppes.
Unity!
But this is a DNA issue. And the problem with them is that they're probably robots. But anyway, this is a DNA issue. So everybody who has blood in their fucking water sacks, I don't know what you humans have, but everybody who has blood in their body right now needs to fight and feel this same shit that I feel every day that I wake up and I don't know if I'm going to go home safe. I never know. And this is a fear. This fear of the presence of police, we were raised in it. So to see people scatter at the first signs of intimidation, of separation, of confusion, disgusts me. Know why you're here.
remember why you did.
Some people may get arrested. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. Some people may. I hope not today, because we're not breaking any laws.
Right. Yes.
But we're going to protect you as long as you stay aligned with the mission. As soon as you fall outside of alignment, you're no longer my problem, because you put us all in jeopardy. So please, to the other leaders out here, thank you. Let's all get on the same page. We're all out here for the same reason, baby, and I love everybody out here, and I'm not in competition with nobody.
Yes.
Because we only have one enemy, and it's nobody on this side, unless there's some undercovers, but there's nobody on this side. And I laugh and I joke because I know that everything has its opposite side. The pain that black people have felt for all of these f***ing years has its opposite side. Yin and yang, baby.
Protesters in an old school bus exhorted the crowd. Still others faced off with riot cops. Food was served free to all inside the encampment. A character in a Spider-Man costume danced on a car roof. Spidey spoke with WBAI.
The purpose of Spider-Man in general, growing up, what did it give us? It gave us a New York City hope, gave us perseverance. So why not take that same energy and bring it out to New York City and the streets of New York City and make sure the people know that the battle is not just for black people, it's for everybody. It's for equality. It's for black, brown, white, everybody, no matter who you are, everybody faces some kind of injustice. It's just unfortunate the black and brown communities face it at a much higher level. And, you know, we got to stick together as a community to make sure that no one goes through injustice anymore. And that's the bottom line. And again, like, you know, we protested a bunch. I've been coming out almost every day. And most of it, not in Spider-Man, but when I come out as Spider-Man, just the little smile on everybody's faces makes all the difference. Some of these people have been here for like 7-8 days. And, you know, when I pass by, my just a few minutes or a few hours of presence just puts a spark in everybody's faces. And when I saw that, I'm like, you know what? Let's do it.
The protests went on through the night, culminating in a shoving match with police at about 6 this morning. As of last reports, the encampment is still there. The budget, a compromise that left council members on the right and left unhappy, was addressed by Governor Andrew Cuomo this morning.
Well, they cut $1 billion. So what? Does that mean they're not going to beat protesters? Does that mean they're not going to drive them over with a car? What did that actually change? The protesters are saying, I want a new police department. I want all this stopped. Use of force policy, demilitarized, bias training, de-escalation. That's what we want addressed. That's what the protests are about. The protests are not about reduce the budget. They meant reduce the budget, defund the police, provide more money to other services. Because it's really about mental health. It's really about substance abuse. Stop locking up mentally ill people. Stop locking up drug substance abusers. Get them treatment, not a jail cell. That's what they were saying.
Come Governor on. Andrew Cuomo.
They want real smart change. And you haven't had a discussion on it. Well, they're going to cut the budget. And what does that accomplish? Well, less money for the state police. Does it reduce the number of personnel? Well, they have to figure that out. Does it change the use of force policy? Are they going to stop beating people? Does it do anything on their immunity? Does it make the complaint process faster or more transparent? What does it do to change anything that we've been protesting about for a month? Would it have saved George Floyd's life? Would it have saved Eric Garner's life?
Governor Andrew Cuomo. Meanwhile, activists who've been wanting to cancel rent won a partial victory today. The state will extend indefinitely a ban on evictions, but landlords can still sue to collect the back rent. A candidate for Congress in the Bronx, Jamal Bowman, garnered a big lead in the Democratic primary over longtime Representative Elliot Engel. Yesterday, Bowman signed on to what activists call a national eviction blockade to protect black and brown tenants.
How the heck are people supposed to pay their rent when they do not have an income coming in? And our government, not just here locally, but at the state level and nationally, has not stepped in to provide relief and resources and support to the people in this district or across the country. We bailed out Wall Street. We bailed out large corporations in terms of Amazon. We bailed out the cruise line industry, and we bailed out the airline industry. We did not bail out small businesses. We did not bail out the working class. And to your point, Jeff Bezos' wealth has grown by tens of billions of dollars, while over 120,000 have died of COVID, and while tens of thousands right here in this district cannot pay their rent. This is a system that's inhumane. This is a system that what we see is a manifestation of institutional racism within housing, but within all of institutions. And it's a system that is nurtured by the people we elect to serve us at every level of government, not just Republicans, Democrats included. All have been co-opted by large corporations and the wealthy elite while the people continue to suffer. So what we've called on at the federal level as well as at the state level is a cancellation of rent, a paycheck guarantee in the neighborhood of $2,000 per month while we ride out this pandemic, a cancellation of mom and pop mortgages, and a cancellation of utilities. We call for that at the federal level. We're pushing for that at the state and city level. And unfortunately, the elected officials have yet to respond accordingly, which is why we are in full support of any kind of organized rent strike, because what the hell else are people supposed to do? They would pay their rent if they were earning an income to pay their rent. And now, because the moratorium on evictions is being lifted, now our courts are going to be overwhelmed with eviction cases, which, you know, some are being conducted via Zoom without representation, without due process. And again, the stress and the trauma of living with this on a day-to-day basis is something that Black and brown communities in particular continue to bear the burden of, while also protesting the death of George Floyd and police brutality and being further brutalized by the police. And people in this district who haven't always been involved, they haven't always been engaged, but now they're excited and now they're engaged because they have someone representing them who comes from where they come from and knows what it's like to have to make a decision between rent and food and utilities and taking my child to Great Adventure to have some social time.
Likely representative from the Bronx, Jamal Bowman. Tomorrow, a new law rolling back New York's recent bail reform takes effect. Enacted on January 1st, bail reform basically eliminated bail for most nonviolent low-level offenses. But after an intense campaign by state prosecutors and police claiming the reforms increased crime, the state legislature reversed sections of the law. The statewide organizer at the Center for Community Alternatives, Marvin Mayfield, was formerly incarcerated. He says the reversal is reactionary.
There were prosecutors, police agencies that were upset, to say the least. They were upset the fact that finally there was going to be some fairness in the pretrial legislation in New York State. So they launched a smear campaign, a fear-mongering campaign, and spread misinformation to get public sympathy to roll back these reforms.
What did they roll back?
Bail reform basically changed the way people were being held in New York State jails pretrial, meaning that bail was no longer an issue for most nonviolent crimes and for the low-level drug offenses and things like that, which were probably the majority of cases, especially in Black and brown communities. So what this did was this leveled the playing field for those who afforded the opportunity to pay their bail, as opposed to those who could not afford to, who languished in jail and suffered all types of indignities by being incarcerated pretrial. This new legislation, bail reform, eliminated cash bail for those particular offenses.
Are they just stepping back somewhat from the bail reform, or are they just going back to the way it was?
It's not a complete repeal of the bail reform, but in many instances, the people who are most benefited by this bail reform will once again be eligible to be detained again. It's pretty much crimes of poverty, offenses that were typically found in the communities where they are black and brown and low poverty.
What's the excuse, Hops, for saying that they saw upticks in more serious crimes?
That was the whole media smear campaign that was rooted in misinformation, lies, and cherry-picked stories. Pretty much what they did was they found stories that caused fear. A person was arrested for a serious or a violent crime. The district attorneys decided that they weren't going to press charges for a violent crime. And so far, the person got out and released on the new bail reform. So they take this story and amp it up and say that the police and the district attorneys and the judges have no power to detain people who commit serious crimes. But this was never the case. This was never true. There have always been mechanisms for people who needed to be detained because of serious crimes. This legislation that we fought for years, right, was just so that people who were being held in jails because they couldn't pay their way out were given some type of fairness in court.
Who is most responsible for this rollback of the reform?
I won't name them by name, but some of them will call them the Long Island Six. The Long Island Six were a group of senators out of Long Island who pushed for this rollbacks in the legislature. They worked with district attorneys, police agencies that were our opposition. And they started this campaign of misinformation and fear-mongering. What's really interesting about all this is that out of all of the claims of fears and everything else that they said would happen as a result of bail reform, and that they said that it would be a direct threat to public safety, none of these things ever transpired or came to be. And yet they were still able to convince many people in the Senate and some in the Assembly to go forward with these rollbacks. I can't say that each and every person that was in our assembly or every senator was responsible for these rollbacks, but the ones who were in key positions to uphold this kind of caved in to this fear tactic and this fear mongering and elected to play politics rather than to uphold what was fair and what was right and what was safe for New Yorkers.
What are you going to do next?
We are not going to cave in. We're not going to give up. We're going back to Albany when it opens up again. We're speaking to our legislators now and building up momentum and letting people know exactly what happened with bail reform. We believe that in time we will be able to restore the gains that were lost this time. But it's really up to our elected officials to stand up for what's right and not to cave into this racist agenda.
Anything you'd like to add?
We're not giving up. It's a setback, but we're coming back.
Marvin Mayfield, statewide organizer at the Center for Community Alternatives. And there's another spat between Governor Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio as the city lurches toward a reopening from the COVID-19 crisis. With phase 3 originally set to allow some indoor restaurant dining, Cuomo said no today. Without mentioning the mayor directly, he implied compliance with the rules in New York City is just not good enough.
Government is supposed to be enforcing compliance. That is the governmental role. And that is not happening to a sufficient basis. I have said from day one, we have been clear from day one, local governments don't have any legal authority to determine opening, reopening of schools, businesses, restaurants, offices. That's not what the local governments do. That's a function of state government. All the openings and all the reopenings, they're done all by the state government. Every county in the state of New York, every city in the state of New York. That's my job.
Governor Cuomo earlier today. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In Seattle, the Capitol Hill Occupy protest, or CHOP, was raided by police early this morning after an executive order from Mayor Jenny Durkan. The protest zone was established in the midst of the unrest after the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis cop. A local police station was abandoned, and the surrounding area, including a city park, was occupied by Black Lives Matter and other groups. Police said there were two shootings in the enclave and other crimes that prompted the move. Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best.
Support peaceful demonstrations. Black Lives Matter. And I, too, want to help propel this movement forward toward meaningful exchange in our community and meaningful change in our community. But enough is enough. Our job is to protect and to serve the community. Our job is to support peaceful demonstrations. But what has happened here on these streets over the last few weeks, that is lawless and it's brutal. And bottom line, it is simply unacceptable. I will continue to work with our Community Police Commission, our Office of Police Accountability, and our Office of Inspector General, and all of our community partners and city leaders to encourage peace and move forward with how to re-envision public safety in our city.
Can you tell us about all of the people or the agencies that accompanied you this morning?
We really want to thank the Bellevue Police Department, Chief Milette, for sending his resources to assist us, as well as our local FBI that was out here as well. Otherwise, the personnel were from the Seattle Police Department.
And that was Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best. It's interesting she mentioned the local FBI. President Trump has made many threats against the Seattle zone, claiming that he would send in federal officials at the behest of the government there if they wanted help in evicting people. According to reports, 23 people have been arrested. And in Washington, revelations publicized in the New York Times that President Trump missed a briefing on allegations that Russia had offered bounties to the Taliban to kill Americans in Afghanistan continues to roil officials. Democratic Representative Adam Schiff talked to reporters after a White House briefing on the matter yesterday.
There may be a reluctance to brief the president on things he doesn't want to hear, and that may be more true with respect to Putin and Putin's Russia than with respect to any other subject matter. Many of us do not understand his affinity for that autocratic ruler who means our nation ill. And so if there's a problem with being willing to brief the president on intelligence he doesn't want to hear, that's a problem for our entire nation's security.
And as Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, the former New York City mayor and Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, had a different take earlier today.
Some kind of a felon in the federal government, some kind of a deep state criminal, because he committed a very serious crime. That was actionable intelligence, that was raw, disputed, unresolved. I mean, I can't think of a worse crime. It's not quite treason, but it comes close. He should be caught and he should go to jail for 20 or 30 years.
Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. The Times reported today that the leaked intelligence indicated an unusual amount of cash changing hands in Afghanistan. The United States has spent $2.4 trillion in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars since 2001. And Monday night, in Washington Square Park in Greenwich Village, there was a site of a protest by violinists, cellists, and other string aficionados. They were there to protest the killing of 23-year-old Elijah McClain, who's black, in Colorado by a police officer last August. The cops got off, but the case is getting renewed attention. A young violinist explains why she came.
Yeah, some of us are professional musicians, some of us are, I mean, all levels of musicians.
I'm a theater artist, so like this is my hobby. This is my first time playing with a group ever, so
great.
Why not, you know?
So what do you think? How did it turn out?
Awesome solidarity, like audience and like everyone who participated. Really, really beautiful to see us like all uniting right now in our like grief and anger.
Did you know about that before this?
No, and most people didn't. His death was not widely publicized until about 10 months after he was murdered. So I think it's up, but I'm glad that folks are drawing attention to it, and I think this is like a powerful way to honor him and to keep his memory alive and to like keep the awareness of the injustice he experienced alive.
And that was a violinist at Washington Square Park on Monday night. The autistic teen was heading home after buying his brother a cup of tea. For an unexplained reason, police in Aurora, Colorado stopped him, and the interaction turned violent as cops put Elijah in a chokehold. McLean went into cardiac arrest and died.
Arrest the cops that killed Elijah McLean.
That's some of the news for Wednesday, July 1st, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.